This hour of Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com.
I was driving up at about 12:30, quarter to 1, up the DVP, and you could tell it was way north of the 401, so it wasn't anything to worry about, but there was repeated chain lightning, like every 5-10 seconds. It looked like a pretty epic storm up the 404.
And you could see up here that it had really caught a downpour up here, so fortunately we weren't on a golf course.
Any holes in one so far this year or no?
No, I'm really slumping. Really behind the scenes.
You got to hit your quota.
Set it pretty high.
Supposed to have one a summer now, right, Pooley? Well, you were there for two. One of them...
No, I wasn't there for the second one. Duthie was there for O-Dogs. Our hole-in-ones were literally 1 week apart.
Yeah, it was crazy. Almost to the point I didn't believe it.
I know. Duthie was the one that was there for both of them.
Duthie was at Cabot, I think, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, based on his Instagram.
And Dregs this weekend.
Right.
Cabot is the place to be if you're a golfer right now.
I know.
I think in North America. The number of people I've spoken with that have gone there are just remarkable. And the reviews it's getting are staggering.
How many courses are there?
I believe there's two right now.
Some of those holes, like just right off the cliff, it's
really
just
is.
The ocean's right there.
Really,
absolutely
really cool.
Gorgeous.
Really cool.
Great time of year, of course. And I mean, we've been enjoying some amazing weather here in the Toronto area. Are you a heat guy?
It doesn't bother me.
See, I love this.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me at all.
Because we'll be begging for this in January. Like 30 with a Humidex of 40, give it to me. I can handle that. I just...
For a guy that's born in Timmins, you got to understand relative heat is... But I have no issue with it at all.
When is the earliest it snowed or latest it snowed when you were a boy?
I think they've had a July snowstorm there, a freak hailstorm or whatever it might be. Yeah, it wasn't... You didn't have a very long summer. Now, you had long days in the summer. You know, but then my first year actually playing pro, I was in Sweden as well. And so you had days there, long and short of it, you know, that were ridiculous. I mean, you had 5 hours of light during the day at one point in the year in the town I lived in Sweden. So I have been across it. We used to laugh at the, you know, up north in Timmins in the summer because you could fire your lawnmower up at 11 p.m. to cut the grass.
Yeah, exactly.
Think nothing of it.
You get all the sports out of the way. Ah, honey, don't worry about it. I'll cut the grass at 11 tonight.
Yeah, well, big baseball town, big summer baseball town and softball town.
Really?
Huge, because you could play late into the night, but it was a really, really had great, great baseball and softball up in that area.
It's Scott MacArthur and Dave Poulin, and we're with you today. Gord Miller will join us tomorrow. I'm in all week for Brian Hayes, who's taking some well-deserved vacation.
Why would Gord be working on a Monday, right? He was not going to come in on a Monday.
Well, isn't that his nickname, Mr. Long Weekend?
Tuesday to Thursday.
Is it Tuesday to Thursday?
I don't know.
I have to take a look at the schedule.
He's a guy who works about 8 days a week during the winter, so I don't know what he does during the summer.
Right, yeah, exactly. Eight games a week. Two on Sundays.
He is that.
He's just an absolute grinder. I've got some thoughts on the Marcus Stroman situation, which ended the first half of the Blue Jays season, and we'll get to that. And I think the best way for Pooley to chime in on that is from a management's perspective and how you might go about dealing with a situation like this, even if you even feel the need to deal with a situation like this. But we'd be remiss, Pooley, off the top if we didn't address the tragedy that occurred early yesterday morning in Hamilton, and that is the drowning death of Ray Emery, who passed away at the age of 35. He would have been 36 on September the 28th. And just really sad. Because when a life is cut short at such a young age, it's sad. But this is also somebody I'm assuming we have both come across in our travels. I had an opportunity to cover Ray when I was a younger broadcaster up in Ottawa, and he was a personality, and he was a guy, so if it's 05-06, he would have been, quick math is always a bad thing, 23 years old, when he essentially, as the backup, was forced to fill in for most of the second half of the season and into the playoffs for Dominic Hasek, who had injured his adductor muscle at the 2006 Olympics. And Ray jumped in, wasn't scared of anything, and did a really nice job. And then the following year, as a 23 going on 24-year-old, he outperformed Martin Gerber in the early part of that season, took over the number one goaltending job in Ottawa, and helped lead that team to the Stanley Cup final. And, of course, they would go on to lose to Anaheim. But what I remember about Ray, I think if I were to sum it up real briefly, is he was a great athlete, a very good goaltender, and he was a young man who lived his life his way. And very sadly, that life has come to an end far too soon.
Far too soon, Scott. And I didn't know him personally, and I was in the college game when he entered the pro game, and so we had no overlap. And for me to watch the outpouring from people that I do know, and with social media now, you can get such a direct outpouring that's very specific and very pointed, and to see the messages that have been from all across the board of both management and playing styles. I was on the other side of that Stanley Cup Finals. I was working for Anaheim at that point, so I was watching from a little bit different perspective, and it you know, I was watching him play for Ottawa and watching what they were doing as they were going through the playoffs and potentially going to line up with them. But the zest for life, I can fully understand. And I played with a goaltender in Philadelphia, Pelle Lindbergh, who, you know, whose life ended far too soon at the age of 26 and lived life. And I did Pelle Lindbergh's eulogy and talked specifically about how he put more into those years than many people do in 60 or 70 or 80 years. It's simply the way he chose to live. And, you know, and it seems like in the tragedy of that coming to an end far too soon. But when you look back, and, you know, I look back at teams that I played with who've lost too many people far too early. And so from losing it's clear today when you're reading it that late afternoon as we got that news on Sunday, a lot of people had lost one of their favorite teammates, regardless of where they came across him, be it junior or the NHL or the American Hockey League where he starred, that, you know, they felt they were losing a real friend far too early.
Yeah, he was, having worked in Ottawa, and Ottawa has a reputation. Ottawa is a more fun city than I think a lot of people give it credit for.
I'm an Ottawa guy. I understand Ottawa more than...
So,
my family's from Ottawa. I've spent a lot of time there over the years, so I do understand what you're saying.
And the city has changed, especially in the last 10 years with the redevelopment of Lansdowne Park. That, to be quite honest, Pooley, I think Lansdowne Park and all the restaurants and all the bars, and of course that's where the football stadium is and the junior hockey team, the 67s Arena, is tucked in underneath the north side stands. I think that's the place where everybody goes now, to watch the games, to hang out with friends, to throw a few back, to have some dinner. Even more so than the Byward Market,
right
in the heart of downtown, or Elgin Street. And of course, the arena's way the hell out there in Kanata.
Well, the potential of the LeBreton Flats and what has happened, you know, just on the other side of the Parliament Buildings from Byward Market is what would potentially people see happening at Lansdowne. And you have to have a destination, and you have to have more. It has to be built around it. And the standalones far away simply don't work. See Florida, see Arizona, see Ottawa. It doesn't work. And the Ottawa area, Kanata has really built up around it. Like, that part has worked.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just
the
really tough.
Itself and
tough to get there from downtown without a considerable traffic headache. And if you live in the East, Orleans, or Gloucester, you live on the other side of the Quebec border in Gatineau, and you got to cross one of the bridges in heavy traffic at rush hour to try to get to the rink. But my point was, is that Ottawa does have a reputation as a quieter town, and it is not necessarily a free agent destination over the course of a summer. They've been able to attract some guys, the Alex Kovalevs and the others of the world, when they had pretty good teams and could sell the notion of winning. But Ray Emery was this standalone type personality. He was flamboyant. He was out there. He liked being in the news. He liked being in front of the camera, and he was very good at it.
In a sport that doesn't accept that very well.
Exactly. And there are examples of those types of players today, and Pooley, they are heavily criticized for it. But it was one of those situations with Ray, in looking back, and Ian Mendez did a terrific piece on TSN.ca, wrote it yesterday. You can check it out. It's, I still think, right up there on the front page somewhere, detailing Ray's play, some of the controversy behind the scenes that followed Ray during his time in Ottawa. But, man, when he was on top of his game, he was a star for that team. It was far too brief a period because of what went down in 07-08 when he had had the injured wrist in the playoffs and had had that surgically repaired. The Senators got off to a great start in 07-08, and Martin Gerber was essentially the starter by default because Emery wasn't available. And then you get off to such a great start that you're not going to switch up your goaltender if you're John Paddock, by then the head coach. And Emery, I think, bristled at that. I remember that very clearly being around the team. And there were some headaches there that developed, and I think that there were some off-ice concerns that the team had. But his on-ice performance through that 06-07 season, and even with a little bit of controversy in the 07 playoffs when he missed that flight before Game 5 back to New Jersey, but then eventually got himself to New Jersey on a commercial flight and made 27 saves in the series-winning game over the Devils.
The bottom line of pro sports.
Produce. When you produce, whatever else may be going on is a lot more easily tolerated. When you're not producing, or you're not the starting goaltender anymore because the team had gotten off to such a great start, and he raises a bit of a private stink about that, some of that stuff becomes less tolerated. But I will.
It becomes a lightning rod without a question, but that was my earlier point about all of the different notes that were coming out from teammates.
Yes.
Because teammates love that competitive spirit. And so teammates look at a player who, you know, might cause an issue because he wants to play more.
He cared.
Exactly.
He cared.
Exactly.
There's no question he cared. And he was a guy who, like I said, relished the spotlight and lived his moments away from the rink in his own way. He blazed his own trail. And it's I guess, easy posthumously to look back on that a little differently than when you're covering the team and there's controversy surrounding it. But in looking back, he was a genuinely good dude. He was a good dude who was doing it his way, and his way was a little different than what most of the rest of us were probably accustomed to. And so it takes us trying to adjust and understand different personalities.
It makes us uncomfortable is what it does.
But it forces us to adjust.
Yes.
It forces us to adjust and consider that different people have different sets of benchmarks in their life, and he'd still come to work and he'd still get the job done.
And I love when not only teammates, but people he competed with, like Marty Bernal, you know, want to weigh in and say, because you respect competitive spirit on the other team. Respect it. When you're going through it, is he causing you an aggravation? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, you shake hands with a guy like that in a lineup after a playoff series, and you shake them sincerely.
I'll never forget the night in Buffalo in 2007. So it's the 06-07 season, where he fought with a smile ear to ear.
Andrew Peters.
And that was the same night he fought Marty Biron. And I'm going to screw this up, but I hope not. There was the Chris Neal hit on Chris Drury.
Yes.
And this was back when we were... It's weird to think this was 11 or 12 years ago, but it was...
That was the cup year?
When they went to the final.
Right.
But before that, Chris Neal did one of those blow-bys on Chris Drury where he got up underneath
like
Drury's...
chicken wing, yeah.
Kind of lifted up the shoulder under the chin. And it's weird to think it's 11 or 12 years ago. But we started the head hit debate with those, you know, what was he leading with and all that stuff that long ago now. Brian Murray, then the head coach of the Senators, was up on the bench screaming at one of his best friends in the world, Lindy Ruff, who was the head coach right. of the Buffalo Sabres, and they had history together, longtime buddies. But and just living there at the time, hosting the postgame show with Mike Eastwood, the calls we took on what was then Team 1200, is now TSN 1200 that night, were incredible. It galvanized the city.
And I saw Andrew Peters actually reached out today and saying he was sorry that he never got a chance to actually meet Ray Emery.
Oh, he met Ray Emery, all right.
he never got a chance to hang out with Ray Emery
yeah.
in that standpoint. Yeah. Once again, all the notes that came out from, and that's my barometer, is all the people that I know well who did weigh in on it from all different walks, be it the trainers or the, you know, the different people that dealt with him across his game.
How did you treat me? That's
exactly right.
The barometer, and I think that's the barometer that
teammate was a word that was used an awful lot.
Yeah, and that is the ultimate compliment in the sports world, isn't it?
It is that
good teammate. And so it's certainly sad. We're going to continue the Ray Emery conversation over the course of the program. Matt Nichol from BioSteel is going to join us at 4:30. And part of the story that we haven't gotten to yet was Ray's health concern right around 2009, 2010, when he was diagnosed with a vascular necrosis, which is, you probably don't know what a vascular is. Necrosis is death. Dead. His hip bone was essentially dying because not enough blood was getting to that area. And Ray underwent a very complicated surgery. It was a surgery really that was aimed at saving his leg so that he could walk again. But what Ray was determined, not just to walk again, but to get back into the NHL. And Matt Nichol was the trainer for Ray Emery, who pushed him and helped him get back. And so we'll relive some of those memories with Matt in just a little bit. Marcus Stroman, all the rage on social media today after a bit of an outburst after yesterday's game. Where is the line in player media relations? And I understand that Joe Q Fan or Jill Q Fan may not concern himself or herself with this, but I have a specific point to make as I offer you my thoughts based on what my understanding is of what went down. And we'll get Pooley's thoughts from a management's perspective, because Dave has been in a bunch of front offices, has been a leader of men. He's either as a coach or in a front office with a couple of NHL teams. How do you deal with this if you need to deal with it at all? We'll get into all of that. It's Scott MacArthur. It's Dave Poulin. And Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050.
The greatest moments in history are now up to you. This is TSN 1050's Sound Wars. Yeah!
All right, it's the second annual Sound Wars. 32 of the best moments compete head-to-head bracket style. We have four conferences this summer. The Jerry Conference, which I think is pretty self-explanatory. It's the best of the worst Jerry has to offer. The Kessel Conference, all those Kessel-like moments in sports. The Yes Guy, No Guy Conference, an homage to a broadcasting great. And the Oh My Goodness Conference, which plays that made you say OMG. The sound with the most listener votes wins the war and moves on to the next battle until we crown an ultimate Sound Wars champion. So the winner from today's Sound Wars battle between JV's Threes and Holtby's Stick Save is JV's Threes.
Valanciunas, death taxes in JV's Threes! It is that time!
A little Matty D and Jack. Now it's time for a Sound Wars battle in the Jerry Conference. This is seed number one, Jerry Claus.
Here comes Jerry Claus, here comes Jerry Claus, right down Jerry Claus Lane. He's got a bag that's filled with takes for all the boys and girls again. Hear those boo bells jingle jangle. So jump in bed and cover your head, 'cause Jerry Claus comes tonight. Oh, here comes Jerry Claus, here comes Jerry Claus. Oh, enough of this sh**.
All right, so that's seed number one.
Let's hear
from seed number eight, Farber B slaps Hayes.
Nice of Brian Hayes, that stiff, to take the week off after his debut on Trade Center. Must have been so exhausting getting carried by Dave Naylor and Michael Farber. Michael Farber slap Hayes all day long.
Go to TSN1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite, Jerry Claus or Farber's B-Slap of Hayes. Voting for this Sound War closes tomorrow morning at 8. Listen to Landsberg in the morning for the results and for the start of a new Sound Wars battle on TSN 1050.
So you're focused more on the performer of these pieces and what he exactly looks like when he's doing the performance.
I've never seen Jerry as it's happening.
Can you imagine, though, that you go right into character? Like, you know he goes right into character. You don't just do that without being in full character.
Well, the thing is,
when I watch a real character actor, and you're watching a good series, and you're so immersed in the character. He is that character.
Well, it's like being a pro wrestler. You go out through the curtain, and you're either an extension of yourself, or you're playing a complete and total different character. And then when you come back in, get back behind the curtain, you got to be normal you again. I mean,
well, it's like most pro athletes actually do, Scotty. I mean, once you step on the field or the ice or the court, that different persona takes over.
Pooley Claus?
But there was maybe a little.
Was there a side of Dave Poulin that we wouldn't necessarily get around TSN? I mean, you were a competitor, obviously.
Yes, there
did
was.
You'd step out onto the ice and you'd kick it into a different gear.
Oh, absolutely, no question. No question.
Because I think this is...
You had to.
This isn't like a splitting of the atom. It's gotten talked about a lot, but there's a reason you guys got to where you got. I mean, skill is one thing, but there's this competitive drive...
No question.
Pooley, that I don't think a lot of people, myself included, have.
No, and the fortunate thing for me was I was able to get most of it out on the ice. Like, I don't have to compete now in Scrabble or... Although Scrabble I do, because...
You're not like Michael Jordan and Chuck Barkley.
The competition's really tough in Scrabble. No, I don't. Like, I'm on a golf course, I'm totally relaxed and fine. But when I stepped on the ice, I had to have a different persona to survive. Like, my talent wasn't going to let me, so I had to have... And it's funny when I started here, because one of the people that I deal with here at TSN all the time said... Okay, I know you have speared people. I've seen it. I know you will two-hand across the back of the ankles. I've seen it. So it was interesting to get that thought process from, say, yeah, I guess I have. And yes, but his persona, the way that character is able to put himself into the person of Jerry is spectacular.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, he's great.
It's excellent. And it bothers me because I do like to do imitation voices off air, and I've never... ever been able to nail down Gary Bettman. So the fact that whoever it is who does Jerry does it so well, kudos to him, whoever that person is. It's kind of like the Pokeroo on Polka Dot Door.
You notice just, how his name was never mentioned.
You miss him each and every time. I don't even know where he goes and records these things, to be quite honest with you.
I'm just visualizing it and shuddering, actually.
It's a scary thought. I'm sure Jerry will make his return sometime in the fall. All right, Matt.
He's not working in the summer. I'll tell you.
He's not. I wonder if the real Jerry's working in the summer.
Jerry doesn't work in the summer. No.
Matt Nichol is the founder of BioSteel and one of the premier trainers of athletes in the GTA, and he is going to join us. And we will continue to pay tribute to the life of Ray Emery. Ray is somebody who worked very closely with Matt as he fought his way back to the NHL. From a hip injury that probably would have ended the careers of 99.5% of other people who suffered it. It's Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, with Matt Nichol to join us in a couple of minutes. It's Overdrive, TSN 1050. Pooley, this is considered the worst week of the year in sports, in terms of content, because there's no hockey, there's no basketball, the NFL isn't around yet, there's no CFL till later in the week, and baseball is off. For four consecutive days. They got the game tomorrow night, the home run derby tonight, but...
And yet we managed to spin eloquently for hours.
Here we are. Waxing poetic. I just put my feet up and say, Mr. Poulin, tell me stories about your career.
Yeah.
There you go. But look, listen, and we said this off the top of the show, and it rings true. The hockey world is mourning the very untimely and far too soon death of goaltender Ray Emery, who passed away in a drowning incident in Hamilton early yesterday morning. And I shared some of the experiences I had covering Ray Emery in his early days in the NHL when he played for the Ottawa Senators. We're pleased to be joined under these difficult circumstances by a man who worked very closely with Ray as Ray fought his way back to the NHL from a very serious injury. He's the founder of BioSteel. Matt Nichol is with us. Matt, thanks for taking some time on a very sad occasion. I'm wondering if you can put into words what you're feeling today.
No, I don't think there's not words that are appropriate, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that share the feelings that I'm experiencing today. And Ray was a great guy, and he's dearly missed by a lot of people, myself included.
When did you first meet Ray, and take us through the process of working with him, helping him get back from a very serious hip injury that he suffered 8-9 years ago?
Yeah, so I mean, we had crossed paths a number of times, when Ray was a outstanding goalie with the Senators, and I was working for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we'd pass players in the hallway here and there, so I certainly knew who he was, and I think he knew me enough to see me and recognize who I was, but I didn't know him at all on a personal level until 2010, when he had his diagnosis with avascular necrosis in his hip. And we were connected through his agent, who was Matt Sundin's agent as well, and I'd done a lot of work with him over the years. So he connected the two of us, and that was sort of where the relationship began.
So, Matt, talk about the specifics of pushing through an injury of that significance. And that essentially is the butterfly injury, is it not, with the goaltenders?
A little more significant than that, actually. So it's, obviously goalies are susceptible to the injuries with their hips for sure, and the butterfly certainly contributes to that. But what Ray had is a condition called avascular necrosis, and where the hip actually begins to disintegrate, for lack of a more elaborate description, inside the body. And typically what happens then is you abandon whatever your sport or activity you were doing, and best case scenario, you get a hip replacement and hope to just be relatively pain-free for the rest of your life. But in Ray's case, they tried an experimental surgery where it was called a free vascularized fibular graft. So basically what they did is they removed his fibula, the smaller bone in the lower part of your leg, and harvested a piece of that bone and almost used it as a drill bit to, I guess, for, again, lack of a more elaborate description, to anchor his the big bone in his upper leg, his femur, into his hip, and create a new living graft and a new blood supply into the hip. So it was a very rigorous, incredibly complicated surgery that Dr. Risch did, and did an amazing job with, and it set Ray up at least to be able to, maybe regain the activities of daily living. But that wasn't good enough for Ray. He wanted to make it back to hockey, and it was a very long, complicated, arduous rehab, and that I wouldn't wish upon my worst enemy. And he was typical of Ray, he was a warrior throughout the whole thing, and dealt with a lot of pain and a lot of a lot of hard work, and it's really incredible what he was able to accomplish.
So you're presented with a whole different challenge other than just the medical, the mental side of dealing with it, and you're dealing with a person, and who has battled to get the career that he had, but now you're looking at a different. I mean, you probably had to lay ground rules down and say, this is going to be different from anything you've ever done in your life.
Yeah, I mean, I knew Ray very, very, casually, and I knew him as a player, and I knew obviously he was a fierce competitor and a tough guy and all the rest of it, but I really had no concept of exactly how tough and how hardworking that he was until we went into this process. And I did exactly that. I kind of explained to him, I said, I want to be completely honest with you. I want to say I don't have any experience rehabbing an injury like this, but nobody else in the world does either, because no one had come back from that. So I said the thing is that it's sort of uncharted waters. There's not a plan that we can follow. There's not a template that we can use to guide us. So it's going to be a lot of trial and error, a lot of guesswork on my part. And it's going to take an incredible amount of hard work on his part. It's going to be a long and arduous and painful. And at the end of the day, I don't have any reason to believe that necessarily we're going to be successful. And even if you can get back to being able to be on the ice in goaltending equipment, you guys know very well that there's a huge difference between being able to do perform the movements of a goaltender and being able to play goaltender at the NHL level. It's so competitive that, I wanted to be honest with him. And, there was no doubt in his mind that he was going to be able to do it. And I do remember him telling me he looked me dead in the eye, and I didn't know him very well at that point. But he's, obviously a pretty serious customer, and he looked me dead in the eye and told me, he said, "You just get me back on the ice, bro. I'll worry about being able to play in the NHL. I'm going to play again." So that was, I remember him telling me that, and I thought, okay, well, he sounds pretty confident, so we're going to give it a shot.
With Matt Nichol of BioSteel, who helped to rehab Ray Hemery back from a very serious hip injury about 8 years ago, can you describe, Matt, what a day of rehab was like for you and Ray at that time?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of long days, and it was typically 2 to 3 sessions a day, 6 days a week. We'd meet first thing in the morning, around 8 or 9 in the morning, again in the early afternoon, and then occasionally in the evening as well. I've spoken about it before, but it's, because there wasn't a template, we kind of just threw a whole lot of stuff at the wall to see what would stick, and we really did everything under the sun. We for the first month or two, we were in the pool every day, doing work there. We had to, there was a couple hotels here in Toronto that were kind enough to let us come in and use their pool, because I didn't have access to one myself. We were in the gym, obviously, every day doing whatever we could. At the start of the program, it was really just being able to get in and out of a chair, being able to walk properly. I don't think there's not very many people that could comprehend exactly how painful and limiting that surgery was and the injury was. And I don't think I could have done it. I don't think very many people could have done it, but it was less to do with me, and it was more to do with Ray and his mental toughness and his fortitude. But, we did yoga and Pilates, and he actually spent a good block of time doing ballet training. We went down to the National Ballet, and we had an instructor there, which sounds bizarre, but again, it was, in the effort of, I didn't want to leave any stone unturned, and I didn't want to be able to say we hadn't tried everything. So we did that, a lot of work with Dr. Mike Prebeg, who's a chiropractor, who did a lot of electromedical acupuncture with him. His goalie coach, Eli Wilson, him and I were communicating all the time, and Eli was explaining to me about what he needed to do and how he looked and how we could basically tailor the workouts to be able to, to get him back to do those movements that he needed to do on the ice.
And Matt, something I've read, and I didn't know Ray personally, and our paths never crossed, and when I'm reading on social media all the different people that weighed in that had crossed past them, what they spoke about was his personality and the impact he had on people. So through these days, you're bumping into different people in different locations, and all I'm getting from everyone that I knew well was what an impact he had on anyone he met.
Yeah, I would agree completely. I mean, I would say again that I knew him as a competitor on a rival team, and he certainly he has a presence when he comes into the room the first time you meet him, and it's not a warm and cheery presence, that at least it wasn't at that time. He was in a pretty bad place in his life and dealing with a lot of stuff, but in very short order, those walls kind of came down once he learns to trust someone. And he was beloved here at the gym. We've got 30 NHL guys that were here training today, and there's a lot of guys here were pretty upset, obviously, and sharing stories. And he really was loved by the guys here, and he was a great personality. He was always positive, always upbeat, super confident, a fun guy. He had a infectious smile and laugh, and he was a very, very popular guy here in the room.
Matt, before we let you go, and you might have enunciated it just there, but I was going to give you one final opportunity to put Ray into your own words. How do you remember him, and how would you like Ray to be remembered by others?
Well, Ray was probably the toughest guy I've ever met in my life, or certainly one of them. And people know, would find that easy to believe because of, his play on the ice and the stuff that he's maybe more popular or familiar, the casual fan be familiar with. But if his ability to deal with that injury that he had, his perseverance, his mental fortitude to deal with that is absolutely incredible. And, you know, the fact that he was able to come back, not just to be able to come back and play, but to be able to come back and excel and exceed the levels that he was at. And never once did I hear that guy complain. Never once did he ask for a break. Never once would he accept anyone's sympathy. He was a tough customer and an old school hockey beauty, that's for sure.
Matt, thanks so much for your time under these circumstances. Really appreciate it, and we'll catch up again.
All right. Thank you.
Matt Nichol is the founder of BioSteel and trained Ray Emery back to health after Ray suffered a very serious hip injury back in 2009. And Ray got back to the NHL. He was a part of that Flyers team that ultimately did not win the Stanley Cup in 09-10, losing to Chicago.
Chicago, and then won it with Chicago in 2013.
Won it with Chicago as Corey Crawford's backup in 2013. And Ray passing away in the Hamilton Harbor by drowning early yesterday morning. 5 o'clock hour of Overdrive with Scott MacArthur and Dave Poulin. We'll feature Stephen Caldwell, TSN soccer analyst. We're making these guys work. Even a day after the World Cup comes to an end, but a huge, huge day for France. We'll get into the Marcus Stroman situation, and we'll update you on the Manny Machado situation in Baltimore. It sounds as though the Orioles are very close to trading their superstar. It's Overdrive, TSN 1050. So this will be, Dave, a massive deal when it goes down. Manny Machado is a 26-year-old elite-level player who's an impending free agent and is going to get, I would estimate, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 years and $350 million in free agency this coming offseason. So as it stands right now, playing on the worst team in baseball, the Orioles, they're going to lose 115 games this year. He's going to get peddled out of there. He'll be a rental for whoever acquires him, and then he is going to cash in large this fall.
So which name of those three does not fit with the other two?
Of those teams?
Yes.
You're thinking Brewers.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Brewers jumped in head first last winter, though. They signed Lorenzo Cain out of Kansas City. They traded a haul of prospects to Miami for Christian Yelich.
So do they have a haul of prospects left to do this deal?
I think that they do. The thing with Milwaukee, and you know me, I'm all over the NL Central because I'm a Cubs guy.
Because there's another team in there that you might cheer for.
I might. Yours and my buddy, our best friend forever, Ian Happ, right?
Absolutely.
There you go.
We get an Ian Happ mention in there.
No, we got to get an Ian Happ mention in
there.
Well,
I met him when he was 10, I think, or 9.
You know his uncle, right?
Yeah, very well.
I don't want to digress too far, but there you go. So that's kind of a mutual interest.
I think I met Ian when he was 9.
There you go.
He was going to be a Major League Baseball player then.
Well, he was going to turn out to be right.
Yeah.
He's a pretty good young player, too.
Seemed to know where he was going, but Milwaukee in that grouping is of real interest to me because that's building a baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a lot of choice.
And you,
with the market you're in, you have to build a baseball team. You have to do it in the correct manner. You have to draft. You have to develop. And then you swing for it. And
you swing for
this
it.
This would be a major swing for it.
And this is a different front office than 10 years ago. But do you remember who they went and got, I want to say early to mid-June 10 years ago? CC Sabathia.
Well, they did.
And C.C. Sabathia, and this will curl your hair in this day and age, this is how far we've come in 10 years. C.C. Sabathia was making starts on 3 days rest consistently down the stretch
he was.
For the Brewers. I mean, that guy, everybody says he's lost his fastball in his late 30s. Well, of course he has. The mileage he put on that arm.
He didn't lose it. He used it up.
He used it up, and then he adjusted. He's still a pretty good pitcher in his own way. He doesn't throw hard anymore. But Milwaukee will dive in.
It's a great baseball town. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's, you know, I'm back to Robin Yount and that group back
Paul Molitor.
Paul Molitor was tremendous for them.
Yeah. They play in a nice little stadium now, too.
I
had the opportunity to be there. The Dodgers are fascinating because 6 months ago you never would have said. But Corey Seager, their all-star, very young shortstop, went down, I believe, to Tommy John surgery.
So
back,
that's just a pure rental.
Back in May. So it would be, I would think, a pure rental.
With a team that has the capability to do whatever they want to do, should they choose to do that.
And the commonality between these three teams is that they all have very good farm systems. So they I think, have the pieces that they could cough up to get Manny Machado.
And is Philly a surprise to you this year?
Both Atlanta and Philadelphia are... Philadelphia is less surprising than Atlanta, but I would say that both are a year ahead of where I thought they'd be.
Right. Our friend Alex Anthopoulos down in
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
And you know Alex, he'll swing for the fences and do a deal. if the right one's there. Mm-hmm. Maybe a year early for his crew, though. Still haven't gotten to the Marcus Stroman discussion. We will do that in the second hour of the program. And Stephen Caldwell, TSN soccer analyst.
Looking forward to that.
The day after, the morning before, France World Cup champions. We'll recap. It's Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, Overdrive, TSN 1050.
You've been listening to Overdrive, delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com.